From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is the KUAR Week in Review podcast. Coming up,
Hillary Clinton and Donald J. Trump face off in the final presidential debate. Trump says he will not commit to accepting election results, at least if he loses. What's the Arkansas response?
The state unemployment rate ticks up in September. Meanwhile, Governor Hutchinson tours China to talk trade and bring home some jobs.
Arguments for and against medical marijuana ratchet up. We'll talk television ads, law enforcement, and tax revenue, all ahead of the November 8th election.
Early voting begins this Monday, October 24th, and this is KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Jacob Kaufman.
Well, Jacob, we had a presidential debate this week, last of three debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. We both watched it on the television and, you know, probably didn't sway any more voters than any of the other debates would have at this point. I think a lot of people probably have their minds made up. I think I heard, at least on one of the talk shows, maybe it was the Diane Rehm show, a reporter say about 7% of the U.S. populace might be undecided still. But it was a debate in which the headline afterwards was Trump saying he would not commit to accepting the election results if he loses. Now, as we've heard, he's been saying for a couple of weeks, really emphasizing this point that the election is rigged against him and the media is out to get him and so on and so forth. While at the same time, you have Democrats and Hillary Clinton complaining that the Russian national government is directing hackers to expose internal emails from the Democratic Party and releasing them on WikiLeaks and also influencing the election. So a lot of big claims on either side, although we've also had, at the same time, a number of Republican leaders come out and say that Donald Trump's words about a rigged election are very careless and they're trying to reinstate some confidence in our electoral system, which is, you know, of course, a decentralized system with upwards of 8,000 to 10,000 voting precincts across the country. First of all, let me get your take on the debate as a whole. I mean, you don't have to talk too long about it because I'm sure all our listeners have heard a lot of analysis up to this point. But then we'll kind of segue into maybe how Arkansas officials have or have not responded.
Yeah, so Chris and I went to the same debate watch party, and it was too loud and too distracting. No one was really watching closely enough for me, and I had a really hard time paying attention, first of all. But my impressions were that Donald Trump is more restrained than he was the previous debates. I always think he kind of says the exact same things. It's just he says it in like a more neutral way and not like a comedic, entertaining way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, going into this, with the exception of him interrupting to say, no, you're the puppet. You're the puppet of Putin. That was a funny interruption, kind of. Yeah. But going into this, one of the differences was numerous women from different decades have come out and accused him of sexually assaulting them. And he sort of answered those questions a little bit. And the election result, whether or not he'll accept them, that was the other big thing going into this debate. To no one's surprise, Trump, you know, stuck to his guns on everything, didn't backtrack at all or really try to apologize. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess he backtracked in a sense because he would say, no, I didn't say those things when he was being quoted by a moderator or Hillary Clinton like that. Mm-hmm. But the Arkansas response, pretty much as it has been, while some national Republican leaders, including three previous RNC chairs, the former living presidents, former candidates Mitt Romney and John McCain, while they have all withdrawn their support and saying, you know, this is objectionable, I can't vote for him, Arkansans by and large continue to say this is objectionable, I can vote for him. Anyway,
yeah, yeah.
There wasn't too much comments really in the debate. Governor Hutchinson was asked about it while he was at a press conference for something else. And he said he's in China right now on a trade mission, so he hasn't had as much time to follow everything so closely. He kind of pointed out the Gore-Bush election, how that was close. And so, you know, maybe you don't need to concede right away. You should wait for the results or whatever. But of course, Al Gore going into the election didn't say, this election's rigged, I'm not going to accept it.
Yeah.
He waited until they got the results and then he accepted them.
Right.
You know, contrary to some of his supporters' wishes. And the two candidates also got together. I'd urge our podcast listeners to go to YouTube and look at the Al Smith dinner in New York City. It's like a Catholic charitable event, and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were sitting on either side of the Hillary Clinton called him repeatedly His Eminence there at the dais, and it was pretty funny. They kind of roasted each other. Trump got some booze, saying that Clinton didn't like Catholics and stuff like that, and Hillary Clinton had some good jokes in there. One of the people at the party that you and I were at, Chris, has worked at Flag and Banner in Little Rock.
Right.
And so I said to him, I said, look at that. Trump's got an American flag pin, but Hillary Clinton doesn't have a flag pin on her lapel. It was, you know, I thought he might care about that stuff because he works at a flag store.
Yeah.
There was Gary Stubblefield, our state senator from Northwest Arkansas, cattle rancher, tweeting, why doesn't Clinton have a flag pin on? So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's some symbolic importance, at least, you know, on a superficial level. You know, one thing we've talked about our Attorney General Leslie Rutledge in the past. She's one of the main Trump surrogates and has served on at least one policy committee for the campaign. She's been relatively silent, I think, this week as far as commenting on this claim that he won't accept the election results if he loses.
I'm going to poke a hole in your Rutledge theory.
Okay.
I think you're right. I don't think I've seen her on national television lately, though. But I did ask to interview her on Wednesday, and they said I could, but I ran out of time. But she was available to come.
Oh, okay. Next. Okay, so today as we record this, we just got some new unemployment rate numbers from the Department of Workforce Services and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Numbers for September, Jacob, what does it look like?
Well, there wasn't a statistically significant change, although we did jump up from 3.9 to 4%. So not good, right? You want the unemployment rate to go down. And I think we were about the previous 3 months, we were at 3.9%. And the previous month before that, we were 3.8 and then we were 3.9. So we've been pretty much flat throughout the entire year for the most part. But based on year-ago levels for September of 2015, we were at 5%. So we're still a full point below where we were a year ago. So that's not so bad. The U.S. average is 5% as well. That ticked down from 5.1. So we're still a ways below the U.S. average, though on the whole, we had a worse month, I guess, than the rest of the country.
What sectors are performing well and which are not?
Oh, yeah, got to look at the sectors, right?
Yes.
Okay, so education, if you look at it, oh my God, it got 17,000 new positions for education and government. But that's just because it's the start of the school year for public schools, private schools, higher education, all sorts of institutions like that. So if you look at seasonally adjusted numbers, not such a big deal for education. Looking at seasonally adjusted, some construction showed some declines, lost about 400 positions over the month, and it's 1,700 jobs below 2015 levels. Professional and business services also declined. Some good bright spots in manufacturing, though. It grew by 1,200 positions from August to September. That's not so bad. But it's still a little bit below year-ago levels. There's about 150,000 or 153,000 people employed in manufacturing. So 1,200, great, but you know, there's 153,000 other jobs. Leisure and hospitality keeps posting gains, about 2,000 jobs. Of course, that's a sector that doesn't pay nearly as well as some of these other ones. If we look at the national context, New Hampshire, South Dakota had the best rates of the nation at 2.9%. Pretty different economies, I imagine, from New Hampshire to South Dakota, too. Mm-hmm. Alaska had the highest rate at 6.9%. Arkansas is one of 20 states that are better than the national average.
Moving along with economic news, and this week, Governor Asa Hutchinson held a press conference with reporters, a remote press conference, via Skype. He was in Beijing, China, where
this is a modern Silicon Valley-oriented tech governor, as he's mentioned before, so that's why he had it via Skype.
Yes.
Thousands of miles away.
Yes, using the technology and the internet. Yeah. He's leading a trade mission there, and at this conference, he announced that a Chinese company is going to open a factory, likely in the Little Rock area.
This investment in Arkansas represents the first apparel company that will begin manufacturing from China into the United States. And this company specializes in sportswear and they provide 90% of the sportswear for Adidas.
And he says it's going to create 400 jobs, and the company is going to invest $20 million in a location with jobs paying an average of $14 per hour. Now, we've heard, you know, Hutchinson, he's certainly been on a lot of trade missions during his tenure.
I think it's his second or third to China. And we also have a economic development office in China also.
Oh, yeah. And in Europe also, Berlin, or is it?
Berlin.
Berlin. He's also been to Cuba. So it's been one of the big points of his administration to travel and try to bring back jobs or create investment here. Earlier this year, of course, we also heard that another Chinese company, Sun Paper, would be locating a plant in South Arkansas using some tax credits or
And for this deal with the Adidas manufacturer, as well as other brands, the state would give about $1.6 million annually in tax rebates, $1 million infrastructure grant to help them make improvements on any land they purchase, and $500,000 to help train their workers for them.
And I guess
to communist China. Okay, sorry.
But I do instill a little politics in this, in that, you know, Trump or Hutchinson has been steadfast, well, maybe not a steadfast, but
more steadfast than a lot of national Republicans who endorsed him and then
endorsed Trump, yeah. And he's, you know, still maintaining his support. One of the big, disagreements between Hutchinson and Trump have been over trade policy. Trump, of course, wants to renegotiate all America's trade agreements. Hutchinson taking a more traditional Republican line, saying, no, these trade agreements are traditionally good. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting with this, you know, you hear about Trump saying, oh, all our jobs are being shipped overseas, you know, to manufacturing, you know, we're losing lots of jobs. But here, it's interesting that this announcement is that they're going to be manufacturing jobs coming from China to the United States, seemingly reversing that description of events.
I mean, in a way, I think Hutchinson accepts that premise of Trump, though, that the jobs are being shipped overseas, and he accepts it. And so what is he going to do about it? Same thing as Trump. He's going to bring them back.
Yeah, okay. You know? So
I bet that's what he'd say.
I mean, it's just an interesting dynamic to
look at.
We're getting pretty close to the November 8th general election. Early voting begins Monday, October 24th. And, you know, we still have a lot of groups coming out arguing for and against some of the big ballot issues this election season, two of the biggest being legalized medical marijuana in the state. Of course, we have got Issue 6 and Issue 7. Issue 6 is a constitutional amendment that would allow for dispensaries in the state where patients with certain medical conditions can purchase marijuana to help with their ailments, while Issue 7, the Arkansas Medical Cannabis Act, would allow patients to grow marijuana in their homes, but also purchase it at patient care centers, I think is how they term it. But I guess the news this week is we had some TV ads come out for and against. We also had some law enforcement officials hold a press conference, mainly arguing against. And we also had a report from the State Department of Finance and Administration commenting on the kind of tax revenue that would be generated from these proposals and also what tax revenue would still be needed to comply with the amendment and the act. Let's first talk about these TV ads. Jacob, who are they from and what are they saying?
One of the television ads is from Arkansans Against Legalized Marijuana. Note here, neither of these are trying to legalize marijuana, just medicinal marijuana, but that's the group name. And they had a $50,000 week-long ad buy that should air statewide.
All right, and that group is led by Surgeon General Greg Bledsoe, I believe?
Yeah, he's affiliated.
He's affiliated, okay.
And it was worth noting in 2014 when medical marijuana, or 2012 when it barely did not pass, the only real organized opposition was the Family Council of Arkansas. But this time around, we have a whole different group of players.
Right, and we have also a TV ad in favor of Issue 6 out there.
And Issue 6 tends to be more well-financed than the Issue 7 people for various reasons.
Speaking of well-financed, how are they financed? We on Thursday, the Department of Finance and Administration gave a report to legislators, I believe, talking about what tax revenue would be generated from these two proposals and what would be needed to comply with them.
Yeah, this is based on an AP report. At least that's where I got my information. They would say that each of these proposals each generates about $2.5 million, mainly derived from various sales taxes. However, DFA, or as the legislators like to call it, DFNA, they would say this would require about $5.7 million to enforce all of this. One of them, the Medical Marijuana Amendment, would go through the Alcohol Control Board for a lot of its regulations. The other one, the Medical Cannabis Act, would go through the Department of Health. And so both of them would have new responsibilities, as well as various law enforcement would have slightly different responsibilities as well. Of course, these groups, especially I believe it's the Medical Marijuana Amendment people, they dispute this. They say that it would raise more money than that. And a lot of the regulations would end up being put in control by these different boards and by the state legislature, so it's hard to know exactly what it would look like if the legislature or one of these boards wanted to change one of the regulations for it. And the other argument is that, well, if it's medicine, since when do we make certain drugs legal or not legal based on if it'll cost the state government money? You know, that's not a criteria used for any other medicine. And while it might not make any difference in Arkansas, this week Gallup had an all-time high for U.S. voters who want to legalize marijuana, not just medical marijuana, but marijuana is 60%, so 47-year high.
And I think it's on the ballot in 9 states this year, medical marijuana. It's already legal in 25 states, and District of Columbia, I think Guam and Puerto Rico also have legal medical marijuana laws on the books. And there was also a press conference this week held by a sheriff's group and a county prosecutor's group. Jacob, you attended that. Of course, you know, I think it goes without saying they came out opposed to these two measures, but what were their specific arguments?
Yeah, it was the Sheriff's Association and the County Prosecuting Association. Both of them said they had unanimous agreement from their members to oppose these medical marijuana amendments. There's a little bit of difference. A few people said that they believe there are medical properties to some parts of marijuana, but it has to go through the FDA. That's been like the standard line of argument for most people opposing it. Other people thought a little differently, but let's just start here. Here's Attorney General Leslie Rutledge. She tried to put it out there that just because you're opposed to this doesn't mean you want cancer patients to suffer.
As compassionate as we are, we want those individuals to receive those treatments and those medicines through their doctors, for medicines and prescriptions through the FDA. Because in law enforcement, we have seen too often that even our medicines that are prescribed, we have an epidemic in our state of opioid use and abuse. And we know that if marijuana is legalized, medical marijuana is legalized, that it will cause even greater expense.
Proponents of these two measures would say, well, you still have to get medical marijuana through your doctor. It's not like if you legalize medical marijuana, you could just get it from anyone. You'd still have to go through the doctor, one case through the Department of Health, and these dispensaries that are, there are only a certain amount of them that are authorized. So that's one person. Here's Chuck Graham. He chairs the Arkansas Prosecuting Attorneys Association from the Fort Smith area in west, northwest Arkansas. And he kind of made the argument that he believes marijuana is a gateway drug.
I can't remember the last time that I had anybody in a case, they go to a house that has meth or heroin, anything else, it always has marijuana. There's a direct connection between marijuana and all these other drugs. There always has been, and we need to, for people to understand that. This is not a be-all and end-all that is going to help anything.
I remember speaking maybe 2 months ago with Dr. Joycelyn Elders, the former U.S. Surgeon General, also former director of the Arkansas Department of Health. You know, I can just imagine her laughing at that, saying there's no way that an AIDS patient or a terminal cancer patient or like a 5-year-old girl who needs cannabis oil is going to turn into a heroin user because of that. But that's the argument from Chuck Graham. I bet a lot of those scenes, those drug busts, also probably had alcohol present, but he wouldn't say that we should ban
alcohol. Definitely legal.
Well, it might be a dry county for some of these prosecuting attorneys.
Well, it's true.
Here's Chuck Graham's other point, though, is that he basically thinks that the pro-medical marijuana people are kind of demonizing law enforcement by saying, well, if you keep this illegal, then all these grandmothers with cancer are going to get arrested.
if there's somebody out there who has, like the Attorney General spoke of, serious illnesses, nobody is kicking their door down if they have marijuana and going after those folks. That's just not happening.
I caught up with him after the press conference and several other reporters did, and you know, I asked him, are you saying that you're not going after people breaking the law then? If that's what, that's kind of what he said.
Sure. If we get a case, we'll prosecute any case. We'll enforce the law, which is what we're supposed to do. We take a look at it and we, you know, do what we're supposed to do.
So they're not actively knocking down the doors of medical marijuana patients. That's not their top priority, is basically what he's saying. But yes, they would prosecute if they encountered it. On the other hand, if you're not looking for people who are breaking the law using medical marijuana, the reason why, he said, is because they have other priorities, which is to say it's not as dangerous as many things, which kind of counters the previous hour, you know, that it's very harmful.
Well, medical marijuana, two ballot measures, one of five so far that are cleared to be on the ballot this year, although I think there's still a challenge pending in the court on the Arkansas Medical Cannabis Act.
Yes.
So we'll still await news.
Something
from
to do
that.
With how the signatures were gathered to put it on the ballot.
Yeah, but at least one medical marijuana proposal will be on the ballot on November 8th. That does it for KUAR's Week in Review podcast. Thanks for listening once again. You can find more content on KUAR.org. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, at NPR Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. KUAR is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, although we are editorially independent. Thanks again. I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman. Also, the State Fair, I guess, is still going on this weekend. It's supposed to be nice out. Everybody should go check in the Cheese Dip Festival, perhaps.
Oh, Cheese Dip Festival, yeah.
I heard a KUAR Cheese Dip World volunteer on KABF to the left of us on the dial and ideologically talking about the Cheese Dip Festival today.
Yeah, that's on Saturday afternoon. The World Championship Cheese Dip.
The World
of Cheese Dip where competition.
Where is it at?
Oh, it's going to be at the River Market Pavilion.
So this is the pro tip they had on the KBF show, if you're going to the Cheese Dip Festival. They recommended bringing like a muffin tray so you could have different flavored cheese dip in each compartment so you could sample it more easily.
It's from 12 to 3 p.m. October 22nd at the River Market Pavilion. What else is going on?
We'll find out if the Chicago Cubs are going to make it to the World Series of baseball, not of cheese dip. The segue.
Yeah, they'll face off against the Cleveland Indians if they do.
It's hard to say which is more prestigious. They're both world championships. Cheese dip.
Yeah, it might be harder to get into the Cheese Dip Festival than it is.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. All right, bye.